The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things. Hello. Welcome to Exposing the Masters Within, the one and only hour on radio or the internet dedicated solely to helping you expose yourself. My name is John Schulte. I'm here to serve you, to help you to know more of the truth about you. It's often said, looks can be deceiving. And we all know that the surface of things is, by definition, shallow. So thanks for joining me today as we journey through the looking glass to explore what's on the other side, to explore what's beneath the surface. We're here together to discover, uncover, and recover our masters within. You knew your mastery much more fully when you signed up for your on-earth sojourn. But you mostly forgot it soon after leaving the cozy confines of your mother's womb. You've rediscovered some inkling of it, or you wouldn't be listening to me now. So, it's time to remember the masters we are. It's time to reclaim the power we have. It's time for Exposing the Masters Within. Let's get started.
Today is Sunday, March 11th, 2012, if you're listening live, and whatever day it is, if you're listening to the recording. Welcome, and thanks for joining us, joining me, joining us. I always look at this show, this creation, as a co-creation with each one of you out there listening, whether you're listening live or whether you are joining us through the recording. And I just want to start off by thanking you for that. Thanking you for giving me the space to bring whatever's going to come forward today and every time I get on the air. It's a great gift to me. So thank you for allowing me to join with you to bring this forward. Now, as we begin, we'll begin this week, as we do every show, with making those connections, opening to those connections more fully, making them more real, I guess, and more experiential, because that's what it's all about. How present can we be in whatever we're experiencing in this moment? How can we allow ourselves to connect more fully with what we're here to experience? So let's begin by going within and opening that first level of connection, the connection to our own divinity, more fully. And whatever way you do that is perfect. But just allow yourself to open right now to the experience of your own divinity, expressing more fully in this moment. And breathe into that, breathe into your divinity, and allow it to expand. As much as we are focused in the West, in the United States, in the developed world, on getting things done, on doing things, what's missing, I believe, a lot of the time is just opening to receive. And so that's how I'd like to focus this today, is just opening to receive and allowing this moment, in this moment, your divinity to be more fully present and expressive. That always feels good. And let's connect more fully, open more fully to our Mother Earth, the being that allows us to experience these dimensions. Without Mother Earth, we'd just be floating in space, which wouldn't necessarily be very comfortable in these bodies. So let's allow that expansion, expanding the connection of her presence in our lives and of our presence in hers. This is our relationship, and as with all relationships, the energies go both ways. So first, let yourself feel her presence, open to that, open to receiving the support that she always is for us, the love that she always has for us. No matter what we've done that we might be judging ourselves for, she's not. And so allow that sense of, the divine perfect order of things to expand in your being. And as you do that, give her back your gratitude and your love for the opportunity to be here, in body at this time, to be alive at this amazing transition on planet Earth. All right. And let's expand out into the other dimensions as well, opening up to connect with our guides and angels, masters and teachers, the spiritual mentors that we have. I've heard lots of different terms for this from different people, but it doesn't matter what you call it. What matters is that we open to it, to these beings and their love and support that's always with us. And once more, just allow that to fill you and to feed you. And again, allow your own gratitude to come forth and go to them. Share that gratitude in this relationship that you have, this ongoing relationship that you have with these beings who are here in service to help you become the master that you are. Wonderful. And let's connect up more consciously, more completely with this community of co-creators who join in with us every week or periodically or live or through the recording. It's all irrelevant to those kinds of details. What matters is that we're all joining together to open into that mastery that's within us and to expose it, to bring it to the surface, to, in the terminology of allowing, to allow that dirt to be removed from the gemstone that is our divinity, rather than having to dig it out. It's about allowing it to surface, allowing ourselves to see it and feel it. And we're doing that together. So this community, walking the same path, open yourself to receiving that support of these other like-minded and like-hearted individuals. And offer your support as well, in gratitude for what you're receiving. It's easier to walk this path when we're aware of those others who are walking their paths nearby. Wonderful. And let's expand that community out still further, out to all the light workers who are here in body on planet Earth right now. Whether they will ever hear the show or not, whether they'll ever join us or not is irrelevant. Whether we'll ever meet them or not in the body is completely irrelevant. They're out there, and each one of them and each one of us are holding this beacon of our own divine light. And so this is about connecting the dots between those beacons. And as each of our lights connects with the lights of others, our light grows, as does theirs. Nothing is taken. It's only given, and it's magnified. And that is a magnificent gift that we have. And so as we allow that support to pour into us, to expand within us, once more, bring that gratitude forward and offer it out to all the others who are walking this path, walking a path of empowerment and awakening, walking a path toward community and co-creation. All right. Thank you for that. That always helps me to be in the right place, the best place I can be to be offering this out and co-creating this with you. So thank you for joining me in those connections and in that opening and in the creation of the community And so today, as usual, I'm going to ramble. You never know where this show will go. Never know where my brain's going to take us in co-creation with your energies and intentions. What I'd like to start with is the word and the energy of attachment. And over the last week or so, I don't know exactly how long this has been bubbling in and out of my conscious focus. One of the things that has been striking me very strongly, I believe, is how much we're attached without realizing we're attached. When I talk with people about attachment, being attached to things or outcomes, often attachment is, when we focus on that concept, what we're thinking about is our desire for a particular outcome being so strong that, well, we're going to be extremely negatively affected if we don't get that particular outcome. And that certainly, to me, seems a valid part of attachment, a valid way to think about attachment. But it's incomplete, I believe. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about what else attachment means, what else attachment is, because it's one of those things that I believe sits beneath the surface of consciousness much more often than it's at the surface of consciousness. And both from my own personal experience and from working with others on their path directly, trying to support them in their healing and personal growth and empowerment, etc., what I definitely have come to realize, to believe, to experience, is that what's on the surface is a very small portion of what's actually going on. And yet, it's when something comes to the surface that it's easiest for us to make change. And so, when we can get a picture, an image, an energy about something that is beneath the surface and bring it closer to the surface, it makes it easier for us to change it. And so that's a really powerful concept for me. And so that's what I'd like to attempt to do here today, to explore some of these things beneath the surface that are attachment and how we can touch in on those to create change more easily, to create change more consciously. I don't know about each of you individually. I don't have a list of all the people who are listening right now or who might listen through the recording. But if you're like pretty much everyone I have met walking this path, both people I've worked with as a support for them through channeling or healing work of some kind, or colleagues, or just people I've crossed paths with, one thing that certainly seems to be a theme among most of us, and I would say all of us, but I don't know everyone. I haven't met everyone, so I'll stick with most, is that change doesn't happen as quickly as we would like it to. It doesn't happen as directly as we would like it to. It doesn't happen as thoroughly or completely as we would like it to. And, well, I cannot count the number of times and the number of people I've interacted with, myself included, who have come up against a particular issue that they've come up against before, and they dealt with it before, and they healed it, so to speak, before. And then it comes up again, and what happens? Well, we go into that place of, what's wrong with me? Why am I going backwards on my path? We go into that place of judgment where, well, everything I did before was useless, or it was false, or I deluded myself, or blah, blah, blah. The terms, the words, the energies of self-judgment are certainly infinite in their variety. And I've had this vision for a long time that one way to think about the path is that essentially it's a spiral. And it's not a circle in the sense of that we don't go around and repeat exactly what we did before, but rather what we're doing is going down. It's kind of like walking. Well, one way to envision it would be like walking either up a mountain or down the sides of a large hole in the ground and around the edge. And as we go around, depending on whether we're going up the mountain or down into the hole, we're making progress. But at the same time, if we were to look down from the top, we would be going around in a circle, even though we're either gaining height going up the mountain or descending down into the earth. As we're going around from above, it would look like we were coming back to the same place again, because it's not measuring the dimension of height. And for me, that's the perfect analogy for walking this path, because, well, I like to think in terms of food. And so for me, what I do is I take that circle, if I'm looking down, and I take that circle and cut it in like a pie. And so we have these portions that are going out, and we have the slice of pie that relates to work, and we have the slice of pie that relates to partnership, and we have the slice of pie that relates to self-confidence. Don't we have the slice of pie that relates to self-judgment? And each one of these segments of that circle, of that pie, as we're going on that spiral path, either up the mountain or down into the earth again, whichever vision works better for you, we come around and we come back to the piece of pie that is about work, or we come back to the piece of pie that is about partnership. And here it is. We're dealing with this same issue that we were dealing with the last time we were here. And yet we're not. On the surface, the triggers may be the same. The situations in some ways may feel the same. But they are very much changed. Because we have gone through whatever that healing process is that we went through the last time around. We have dealt with the level of that issue that was on the surface that we could access the last time we dealt with this particular area of our life being a problem. And yet, we didn't deal with, we were not necessarily able to deal with, all the hidden that was underneath that, that was in the depths. But what happens if we take the top layer off, the layer that's on the surface, and again, not exactly a food analogy, but food-related analogy that I really like is, if you have ever eaten at a buffet or a smorgasbord, often at the beginning of the line, they have this stack of plates. And I know I've used this analogy before, so forgive me for repeating myself, those of you who have heard this. They have this stack of plates that you take the top plate off, and there's I'm presuming it's some sort of a spring mechanism underneath that lifts up the stack of plates because you've taken one off. So the stack weighs less, and therefore the plates underneath get lifted to the top. So the plate that was underneath your plate is now the top plate. It's now on the surface, and it's lifted up. Well, that to me is the perfect analogy for this situation. We dealt with the top plate or the top five plates of that particular issue. And we healed what we could. We released what we could of the negativity. And we move forward. We're not getting triggered in that area, necessarily for a little while. So we move forward on our path and we feel like, whew, I left that behind. But we're continuing on the path, and the path is going to spiral, and it's going to bring us back around to that area again. Now, one of the things to keep in mind, and I think this is exceptionally important, when the self-judgment comes up that says, oh, I'm off my path, or I'm going one step forward and five steps back kind of thinking, which will often come up when we feel like we're dealing with an issue that we've already dealt with before, is that the stack of plates is smaller now. There's not as much energy down below the surface in the unconscious or the subconscious or whatever we want to call it. I'll call it the luggage, our baggage in that particular issue, because we've dealt with that much more of it. And so we cleaned it out, but we only cleaned out what we could. And the next plates have moved up. And when we come back around, we're able to deal with the next level of this. Now, another piece that comes to mind in relation to this that I also hear, and this is part of why we tend to go into that place of I'm moving backwards on my path, or I'm getting stuck, or I'm off my path, is that the more that we deal with our pain, the more consciously we're making choices in our lives, the more we're opening up ourselves to a more complete experience of any particular moment. Well, that sounds wonderful until the shit hits the fan, until we get triggered. And then what happens is that we're actually experiencing a higher proportion of the pain of a given moment. And so the paradox here is that the further we walk down the path, often when we actually get triggered, we feel worse than we did the last time we got triggered in this way. And again, the way logic in the West would dictate things, if we feel worse, things must be worse. Well, I don't believe that's the case. They feel worse because we're more present, which means there's more that's able to come to the surface at one time because we have a greater capacity to deal with it. As you know, if you've listened to the show very much, I am very fond of cliches. I think there's a lot of truth in them. And one cliche that comes to mind right here is, and typically the cliche is, God never gives you more than you can handle. And the idea is, whatever the amount of pain is that you're in, well, another cliche, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Same kind of idea, that you're never going to have more than you can handle. Quite frankly, spirit doesn't like to waste things, so often it's right up to the edge of what we feel like we can handle, but it's never more than we can handle. And again, these energies, when this pain is coming up, why is it coming up? Well, if it's up and it's negative, it's up to be moved. It's up to be moved. We are walking a path now more and more consciously into empowerment. You wouldn't be listening. I very much believe that you would not be listening to me right now if that were not true of you. And part of that is getting rid of that which is left over from the past, that's in the way of us experiencing each exquisite moment in fullness. And so when we get triggered, when something in this moment, and this is what triggering is, it's like an explosion. It's like stepping on a landmine. Boom, we have a situation in our life that is not what we desire it to be. And then suddenly there's a hell of a lot more energy than this particular experience could trigger. if it were just about this moment. But, well, let's stick with the exploding analogy here for a minute. It's kind of like every time a particular emotion gets triggered within a particular circumstance. So every time we get angry, it's not just the anger coming up in this moment so that we change this moment. That anger is a stick of dynamite that is wired to all the other sticks of dynamite that are all the rest of the anger that we did not feel in the past. And so stepping on that landmine triggers the first dynamite in this moment, the first explosion. But then there's this ripple effect, like in the special effects movies where this thing explodes and then it takes out, the car explodes, it takes out the whole block in a series of explosions, one after another. And that is what's going on. There's so much more coming to the surface, and that's what it's doing. It's coming to the surface. That initial trigger that sets off the explosion in this moment and ripples down into the old pain is giving us the opportunity to clear that pain out. And that's what that moment's about. And so, as again I've said before, the most important thing that we can do when we get emotionally triggered is to move the emotion. The emotion is going to tell us or offer us the opportunity to make change. That's the suggestion when it is a negative emotion. Here, change this, change something. But that's not actually the time to change it, literally, unless your life is in danger, of course. But that's not the time to change it. The time to change it is after the emotion has been cleared, after the dust has settled, after you've cleaned up the debris from that explosion. Then you can decide how to handle this next time. But again, and let's come back around to the original topic here of attachment. Most of us are so attached to appearances. And God knows, especially walking the spiritual path, we're not supposed to experience negative emotion. Isn't that one of the trademarks of someone walking the spiritual path? They never get angry. They're never afraid. They're never sad. Hogwash. We're in human bodies. We have an emotional body. It's going to get triggered. The mark of the spiritual path is not what emotion we might feel in any given moment or the range of emotion that we might feel. That's not what makes us spiritual. It's not like the negative emotions get taken out of our repertoire the more we develop ourselves. Is that the more we develop ourselves, the more we empower ourselves, the more we clear out the old dynamite, the smaller the explosions are when we do get triggered. And eventually, the emotional body becomes, well, it's just like it's sending a gentle message. Knock, knock. Oh, there's some anger here, time to change something. And we get the message and we make the change very easily because we have cleared that emotional baggage of our anger. But until we get there, until we get to that place where the old has been cleaned out, there are going to be these explosions. And it doesn't mark us as less spiritual than our friends. In fact, in many ways to me, and again, this is not a competition, but in many ways to me, it's actually more a sign of being on the spiritual path. Not that we have emotional outbursts, but that we're willing to acknowledge them and deal with them rather than having them control our lives because we have no choice in the matter. The emotion itself is not the problem. The only problem ever with emotion is what we do or don't do with it. And since most of our programming is to suppress our emotions, at least in the West, we have to break that We have to break that habit. We have to break that, and again, I'm going to come back around to where we started, break that attachment to looking spiritual. And it's not even necessarily that it's looking spiritual to others. It's, well, I'll ask this question. How attached are you to defining yourself as being on a spiritual path? Now take a breath. Really breathe into that. What does that mean to you? If tomorrow you could no longer participate in anything that you now define as spiritual, would you still be on a spiritual path? And how would you handle that? And again, just something to pop in and play with. Not about judgment one way or the other. I'm not sitting here in judgment. I know I'm attached to all kinds of things. And so let's look at that question a little further about attachment and what it means beyond the level of what we're consciously aware of. Well, I think in the most basic sense, one of the most important attachments that we have is attachment to our history. Or put in another way, our story. Our story of how we got where we are. Our story of why we act like this. Why we behave this way. And why do I say that's attachment? Well, it's because we're using it as a way to define ourselves. We're using it as a way to define ourselves, which is a beginning to the path of self-awareness, a beginning to the path of expansion. You know, we have to know where we are before we can move somewhere else. We can't make a change until we're willing to be present with what actually is in this moment. But the more we're defining who we are, the more we're limiting the possibility of expressing in any other way. Think about that. Now, there are some things that, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong or bad about it. But it is a way that we limit ourselves. Now, let's talk about some of the most obvious. You know, we can say, well, I'm in a male body. I'm a man. You may be in a female body or a male body, whichever. And we define ourselves. That's one of the core ways that we define ourselves. Gender. Well, how is that defined? Is that defined by the genitalia? Is that defined by how we feel? What about the people who are in one body or the other, but feel like they should be in the opposite? Men who feel like they're actually women trapped in a man's body. Women who feel like they're men trapped in a woman's body. What does that say about the fluidity of gender? I've only known a couple of people that have dealt with this issue directly, at least that were open about it. But that's got to be an extremely difficult thing to deal with. Now, in some ways, in the context of this conversation, you know, there's a big question here for me. What does it mean to be a man or a woman versus what does it mean to be attached to being a man or a woman? Well, let's look at some other pieces here. What did it take, for example, for the early women in the feminist movement. And I'm going to jump way back before the 60s and talk about the women, for instance, who pushed for the right to vote. What were they doing? They were seeking to break out from the gender roles that had been imposed. This is what men do. This is what women do. Let's fast forward to the 60s or the 50s. There were very few professions that it was acceptable for a woman to work in. Well, when did that start to break down largely? Well, it started to break down largely when women had to go into the workforce in World War II in huge numbers in, well, building bombs and tanks and all kinds of things like that. Jobs that women would not have been hired for before World War II, there simply were not enough men around to do. And so it started breaking down those roles, started breaking down the definitions that we were culturally comfortable with, where women had the option to be, well, to move beyond and work outside of the traditional roles of teacher or nurse or seamstress, things like that. And so what difference does it make, you ask? Well, I'm going to answer this way. The more we bring conscious awareness to these hidden expectations, these hidden attachments that we have, the more we can free ourselves. I'll give an example from my own life. Walking this path, at least in the West, is not nearly as common for men as it is for women. In India, for instance, it's exactly the opposite. Much more common for men to be walking a spiritual path than it is for women to be. That's culturally defined. It's neither right nor wrong. It simply is what it is. But as such, I'll be in a lot of groups that I either lead or participate in. There have been many times where even out of a group of 20 or 30 people, I'll be the only man there, or I'll be one of two or three. And, well, if I were exceptionally uncomfortable with that, what, I wouldn't be able to walk this path. If I were attached to the traditional male roles in this society, I would not be able to be on this path. Because it's not acceptable to get more in touch with the feminine side, the emotional side, so to speak. Now, again, this is breaking down. I'm not saying that this is how it should be, and I'm not saying it's as strong as it was 60 years ago, but it's still there. It's still there. For instance, let's talk stereotypes. But these are cultural attachments, these stereotypes. The stereotypes of which jobs it's okay for women to do versus men. Well, and let's flip it around. In elementary school, now this is not what I was trained in, but in elementary school, it's very suspect still for men to be teachers in elementary school. High school is a different thing. That's more mental. But in elementary school, you got to wonder about their motives. Got to wonder about the kind of man who would want to teach those kinds of kids at that age. Again, those are attachments to gender stereotypes. And as a teacher myself, English teacher originally, now teaching this, you flip that around when it gets older. You know, high school teachers, college professors, they're more likely supposed to be men. Of course, that also depends upon the actual subject matter that's being taught. But these are all breaking down. So the question that comes up is, how do we look at these for ourselves? How do we look at these roles that we play and then explore our attachment to them? Well, I'll offer you at least partial blueprint here. From a class that I taught quite a while ago on soul contracts. But I think it applies here as well, because the concept of attachment is a big piece of this. And essentially, it's these definitions. How do we define ourselves? Well, let's start with the basics. Gender. Are you male or female? Or not sure. let's talk about the other things. Well, let's look at the census data. The questions on the census. Race would be another one that's on there. How would you define yourself? White, black, Hispanic, blah, 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 Asian. Again, continuing on down. This is not necessarily on the census anymore, but religion. Do you follow a religion, or are you in that spiritual but not religious category that's gotten so popular in the past 20 years? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's the socioeconomic status that you had growing up? What's the socioeconomic status that you have now? What's your level of education that you reached, the highest level of education? Did you finish high school? Did you finish college? Did you finish a master's degree or other postgraduate study, et cetera? These are all things that we tend to attach importance to, often unconsciously, because we were taught that these are things to be valued. They create a community for us on some level. Some of them are more obvious communities than others, like religious affiliation. Some of them we fit in more comfortably than others. Again, I'm not one that's going to be able to go talk sports on a very deep level with very many of the many men who are out there as extreme sports fans. Just doesn't interest me much. Played it as a kid, played it up into high school. Lost interest, burned out. I got here because I got here. Even in attempting to explain that, well, is there energy of me trying to justify that I don't fit the norm? Probably. Probably. And that's a sign of attachment. I'm trying to define myself in a way that's acceptable to myself, to explain myself. And it's not even necessarily to you. It's to me first. And so as we start going through each one of these things that have defined us, I would say we can start getting a clearer picture and asking ourselves, well, how attached am I to this? For instance, in the United States, the most common question that you're going to ask someone when you first meet them, or not necessarily you in particular, but most people will ask, and I know you've heard this thousands of times probably, what do you do? Where we attach importance onto our job. But it's not just what our job actually is. It's not, is it fulfilling? The first question is not, are you fulfilled in what you do? Do you feel creative doing it? Do you feel well compensated? Do you love your work? No. No, the focus in this country is more related, although it's considered mostly an impolite kind of question, it's more related to the assumptions that are made about how much money someone has based upon what kind of job they do and the pecking order of that sort of thing comes in. But again, attachment there to affluence, to money, to that way of being in the world, of expressing ourselves in the world. Now, as we explore these things, what use is this? How can we take that further, bring up to the surface? Well, things to notice. One, when you're trying to explain something, if you find yourself seeking to, and the term, one term that's used that I like, to justify what you're thinking, what you're feeling, what you believe, if you're feeling the need to do that, then there's a degree to which, and I'll stop saying you, if we feel that way, when we feel that way, there's a degree to which we are attached to how another person sees us, to their vision of us, and we're trying to get that vision in the right place so that it clicks in a way that they won't have a negative judgment of us. And that's what attachment does. But even just that definition of, let's take it further. These ones I've been talking about, they're the obvious ones. They're the largely external ones. I can point to the diploma on the wall. I can point to the certificate on the wall that has my massage training. I can point to the certificate on the wall that says I have this thing of divinity, so I can be called reverend, blah, blah, blah. Those are the more external ones. But what else? What else are we attached to? If someone were to try and describe us, if you asked your best friend to describe you, and they gave you this list of attributes, shopping list maybe, of attributes. Well, very calm and rational and thoughtful and intelligent and humorous and, oh, very vibrant. Or, again, pick an adjective. And which ones of those are we attached to? Which ones of those do we like to be thought as? And how does that affect our behavior? And I'm going to go back to another one of those cliches of growing up, which I experienced an awful lot, and I heard everyone else experience, and, you know, it's just a huge cliche about be a good boy. Good boys don't do that. Good girls don't do that. Good girls do this. Good boys do that. And how much are we trying to do, even as adults, even as conscious adults trying to walk this path of empowerment, how much are we still trying to live some vision or version of being a good boy or a good girl rather than being a divine light? And that's the difference. Often in the channelings, they will take people into a place where they'll kind of get them in an emotional state, or rather bring an emotional state up, or deal with an emotional state that is already up for them, and then take them into this statement. So you might want to take a deep breath here. You are already perfect. You're already divine. There's nothing that you have to do to become divine. And just breathe that in. Because that helps to let go of the attachment to perform. And I put the phrase performance anxiety out there. And many people will take that in a certain way, but it's about everything. As humans, we're trying to perform to get that approval, to find our self-worth. And it never works. It's never enough. We get a hit of it, and then that goes away. It wears off. And we have to try for more. And the image of that mouse in the cage running on that wheel just comes to mind. We just keep going and going and going. And the only way we can stop it is to step off the wheel. And so for me, noticing these kinds of attachments is a useful step in bringing them to the surface. And so to do that, to bring them up, make a list for yourself of descriptors. They can be roles. They can be occupations. It can go also to just things like brother, sister, mother, father, child, parent, all of those kinds of roles. It can be about gender, religion, socioeconomic status. But I think some of the most compelling ones that are going to help initiate the greatest change are going to be these kinds of adjectives. And perhaps the question to ask is, how would you like others to describe you? Or how would you like others to experience you? And whatever you would answer to those questions, that would be something to sit with. And just ask, am I attached to this? And am I ready to let go of that attachment? And to be who I am in the moment, based upon the moment, not because I have this definition, I have this attachment to myself being a certain way. Some of the most freeing experiences I've ever had have been when I was acting out of character. Well, that's very uncharacteristic. How often, and obviously not to this extreme, my mind works in mysterious ways. But how often, when there's been some kind of a tragedy and someone went off the deep end and started killing people, they always find the neighbor who is going to say, well, it's a big surprise. He was always such a quiet fellow. And obviously, I'm not encouraging anyone to be that uncharacteristic. But there's a great freedom out there. And it actually brings to mind a character that I played once in a community theater production. And the character's Harlequin. But essentially wears this patchwork outfit and is kind of the epitome of the jester. And the jester, at least theoretically, held this place of surprising power in some of the European courts and palaces, etc., as the wise fool, the one who could say things that no one else would say, who could speak truth that no one else would speak, because it was done as a joke almost. And for me, that's kind of where this whole discussion today leads. That I would seek, and I'm not attached to it, hopefully, to any great degree, but I would seek to become more and more the jester, the joker, coyote, who can see the truth behind the attachment, behind the facade, because whatever we're attached to, ourselves being or being seen as, that's a mask we're putting on. And so first, I would love to be my own jester, to be able to see behind my own mask and remove as many of those masks as possible. And then to help continue that process with others. So, I think I will stop there for this segment. And although it's not a commercial announcement, I would like to put forth another reminder. And my intention is to put the email out tomorrow morning. On March 21st, so 10 days from now, my friend John Davis, my colleague, planetary numerologist, has been looking at numbers about at the planetary level for a long, long time. He's been a numerologist for 40 years. I have mentioned this before on the show, but I want to bring it up again. And in all of what he's done in analyzing dates, his analysis says that March 21st, well, it's the most powerful day the man has ever analyzed, which he made the leap that that day is 9 months before December 21st, the solstice. Again, depending on who you talk to, and there's lots of arguments and lots of attachment out there about what's the right interpretation. But depending on who you talk to, that's the end of the Mayan calendar, the beginning of the new. Well, we've been in transition up to this point. We'll be in transition up through that point, and the transition will continue after, as far as I'm concerned. But at the same time, there is still a lot of mass consciousness that is surrounding that date, and it is significant. And March 21st is 9 days before, 9 months before that. So in human consciousness, in human mass consciousness, that's what he calls the conception date for December 21st. So the email I'll be putting out, the information is about simply doing some ceremony, doing something that day yourself, and joining in the collective effort of as many people as possible to build the energy, to conceive of the energy that we would like to experience starting on December 21st, and use that mass consciousness energy, that collective consciousness, to create a huge wave of energy to manifest on and through December 21st. So that's my intention, to get that email out. I do have it, and but anyway, I wanted to let you know that. So that's a good thing to mark your calendars. As far as he's concerned, as far as I'm concerned, I agree with him. There is no, it's irrelevant what time on that day you might do this. You could spend as little time as you like with it. You can do whatever you would like to do to build that energy, to envision that world to come. He does have a prayer that he wrote. We edited it together, and it's a pretty good prayer, I think. Covers a lot of bases, but if you want to get together with others to build the energy more directly, that's great. But anything you do on that day will build into this collective mass consciousness energy of creation. So if you're not on my email list and you'd like further information on that, or to get that prayer sent to you, then you can email me or call me. I believe both my email and my phone number are on the BBS website. Email is contactlight@aol.com. Anyway, I'd be happy to send that out to you and get you on my list. So let's see what they have as far as the channeling goes here. And as always, just allow your breathing to deepen while I do some toning and bring in whoever we have as our guest here at the end. Hello, dear ones. This is Kali, come to be with you today. Welcome. We would talk to you briefly about the energies of destruction. And whatever your response to that word was, take a breath and let it move. You are so attached so much of the time to trying to stick with the positive, the growth, the opening, the expansion, and so resistant and reluctant to go into what you experience as the negative, the pain. And we do not blame you for not wanting to experience pain, but we want to be clear. The measure of how much you can experience in the positive, of how fully you can experience that which you label as positive or experience as positive is limited by how much you are able to experience and move through pain. Now, this is not to go out and create more pain in your life. You have plenty that you have yet to move. And it's not to say you have to go get out the pickaxe and shovel and start digging for it. That's not it either. But it is important to let yourself be with it when it comes. To choose to move it through and out, because it is an opportunity. Every time there is any pain in your life, regardless of what causes it, regardless of what kind it is, whether it is physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, it does not matter. What matters is that pain equals opportunity. Now, we would not say no pain, no gain, however. You can move forward without pain. But you cannot live where you desire to live while you keep bringing your old pain with you. So give yourself some permission right now. And do this with regularity. Give yourself the permission to shed your pain. That may mean that it comes to the surface, because some of it needs to pass through consciousness on its way out. Not all of it, but some of it. And the more you can start changing your mind, changing your perception, changing your attachments. Because the reason, part of the reason for this avoidance is that you have been given incorrect information. That pain means that you have done something wrong. Pain comes as punishment. And that is not true. Pain simply means you've outgrown. It is like trying to wear pants that are three sizes too small. Hard to even get into them, let alone to zip them up or button them. And if you could get into them, it would be extremely painful, extremely uncomfortable. That is what pain is. It is something left over that you're still trying to fit in that no longer suits you. So why would you choose to hold on to it? Because the attachment says, if I'm in pain, I must be doing something wrong right now. Well, breathe into that and let it go. You are a divine light. You cannot do anything wrong. It is time to shatter the polarity of good and evil, of right and wrong. Everything has consequence, but right and wrong is fallacy. It is judgment. It is trying to be something that you are not. You are trying to be a good, worthy human. You are so much more than a good, worthy human. You are a perfect, divine being who has chosen to take part in this massive passion play
where each and every one of you is a pretender, pretending you are less than you truly are, pretending you are unworthy, pretending. Well, I say to you right now, cut it out. Take off the mask. Take a deep breath. Look in the mirror and laugh at yourself. Not because you are pathetic or wrong or silly looking, but laugh at yourself because you have been such a good actor that you forgot you were playing a role. And open to seeing the twinkle of divinity in your own eyes. The knowing that is expanding as you step into your power. The knowing that you are much more than you have been pretending to be. And so give yourself permission right now. Right now, make this statement. I choose to shed my definitions of myself because they limit me from being more than that. Even definitions that are good ones. Like hero and spiritual and healer. They are limits on divinity. They might be stepping stones on your path, but they are not the end point. Stop pretending that stepping stones are your end point. Now, for those of you who are serious in seeking to shed these attachments to limited self-definition, we are building you a fire right now. We are building you a fire that you can burn as much of that energy of limitation as you are able to at this moment. And we will place this fire wherever you would like, dear ones. It can be in your fireplace. It can be in a candle. It can only be in your head if you would choose. It can be wherever you would envision it. But what we would suggest is that you go to it in your consciousness. And as you do, you reach up. And you take off your face. You take off that mask, whatever it is that is at the surface most right now. And you take that mask and with gratitude, you toss it into the fire and you reach up and you take the next mask off. And you, with gratitude, toss that into the fire and you do not need to figure out what these masks are. And you reach up and you take the next mask off and you, with gratitude, toss that into the fire. And each one is consumed fully, instantly. And you take the next mask off and you toss that into the fire and you take the next mask off and you toss that into the fire, and you take the next mask off, and you toss that into the fire, and you can toss and toss and toss for as long as you would like. For as long as you feel you are actually shedding that which you are ready to shed. And let yourself breathe. And consciously choose to open to let more of the divinity that you are fill the spaces that you have just created by throwing away energies that you are attached to defining yourself as. So,
Let yourself feel more of your presence in this moment. Let yourself feel our love and support with you. You cannot create without destroying. The question is, are you destroying consciously or not? Are you creating consciously or not? Are you loving consciously or not? Know that our love is with you, dear ones, and that when you would choose to consciously destroy so that you can consciously create, you know where to find us. Namaste, dear ones. Thank you, Kali. Thank you to all of you. Doc, you can go ahead and start those chimes. Okay. Well, thank you, my friends, for joining with me to co-create this here today. I much appreciate you in my life in this way, on the path and on planet Earth. And I will be back again next week. Same time, same place. That's the intention anyway. And, well, it's going to be my 1-year anniversary in doing the show next week, or close to it. First show was on the Equinox. It won't quite be the Equinox next Sunday, but would love to have you join me again. And let me know what you thought of today, what you think of the show, what you'd like more of, less of. Questions, comments, topics, guests, etc. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Namaste, my friends.